I think this is episode 114, mm-hmm. And
yeah.
Greg is back.
Hello.
So without further ado, we have some listener mail later on in the show. Actually, a lot of listener mail, but we'll start with new business. And Greg is first because he wasn't here last week. So I know you had some long plane rides. Tell us what you've been playing, dog.
Oh yeah. Well, I'll get to that. But first of all, I've got some inside scoop from my trip to Denver.
Fuck you, Johnny, and your plans for the show. Yeah, I'll do what I want. Yeah.
Well, that's right, because when I was at the Pepsi Center, in a massive torrent of people coming past me, I happened to turn my head, and who did I see but the imposing physique of Reginald Fils-Aimé. It's right next to me.
He's a big Nuggets fan.
Yeah, he was there. He's a big Nuggets fan. So I think we can infer from that possibly that he considers Barack Obama a correct kind of paradigm shift in politics.
He's the blue ocean of politics.
The Barack Waggle, I think, is what you call it.
Either that, or he's like Commissioner Goodell of the NFL and he's going to both. But that was trippy. You just turned around and was like, oh, I recognize that face.
That's really weird.
This is not a big shock if you consider that Reggie works in Seattle.
Yeah. Does he still work there? Yeah, because they still got some people up
there.
Yeah,
he's still there. The corporate headquarters are still in Redmond.
Hmm.
And that is a very liberal town. I mean, from Microsoft, Nintendo, a lot of companies up in Redmond and Seattle donate a lot more heavily to the Democrats.
Well by and large, that's kind of a thing with the industry too.
I don't know. You know, I mean, when it comes to like, I don't want to get into politics, but if we're going to talk about game politics for a sec, I think that both parties are kind of equally guilty in pushing for like game censorship ESRB legal enforcement and things like that. And if you go to a site like Game Politics and kind of track some of the trends in politicians and stuff, it's really pretty even on both major American parties as to, like, I mean, I'd like to say there are, like, heroes on both parties, too, but there aren't really any heroes in politics. There's heroes in the lobbying, unfortunately. But there are plenty of villains against freedom of speech in gaming in both parties. So it's not so much that. I think it's just more geographical in this case. You know, that's where those companies are. Those, you know, that's kind of the culture in Seattle. So. Well, so did you get any like pig feces thrown on you?
No, in the streets? I luckily managed to avoid being collateral damage at some bizarre protest when I was there.
Yeah, there were some strange ones.
Yeah, I am back in one piece and unfeced. But
that's good. Unfortunately, we didn't get to hang out. I really wanted to, but I guess you were just super busy.
Like,
and
just every day had to go into.
Honestly, I stayed the hell out of Denver last week.
Yeah,
I mean, I heard stories about how crazy it was. I was like, I don't even want to be near it.
It was pretty crazy, and you had to get your stuff, your credentials early, and then that was it. You were locked in then pretty much for the rest of the day in the middle of Denver. And it got progressively more crazy every day in terms of just getting into the Pepsi Center, or then on the last day into Invesco Field, stuff like that. So yeah, pretty crazy. But I do have to also take up what is now a tradition in that since Johnny felt it necessary to issue corrections when he was away.
I'm
gonna have to take it now. First of all, speaking for the UK, I can honestly say we do not overturn cars during the World Cup. This does not happen. And now it may have something to do with the fact that we have not won the World Cup since 1966. And the thing is, as we all know, back then, pretty much everyone had keys to each other's houses. And, you know, the biggest impediment to getting into someone's house was a map that didn't say welcome. So I guess it didn't go on back then. But yeah, that definitely does not happen in this country, though, in the World Cup.
Even in Ireland?
Yeah, well, again, they rarely even get to the World Cup. It's quite seldom that they do. So,
I kind of, I guess, I should have said, I should have just said football in general instead of World Cup. Like the, what are they called? The it was just like back in July, the English League tournament that was going on.
Well, you've got there's so many different. You've got the European Champions League. You've got the European. Cup that's between the international teams of Europe. There's plenty.
So did a UK team win the Euro Cup this summer?
The European Club Cup, which is was between Chelsea and Man United, so one of them had to win.
Okay. That I was hanging out with a friend when that was going on, and he was talking about it, so I knew they did, and that's kind of what I was thinking.
And
the other,
it's more of a question than a correction. I have to ask, why do I have to be present for a conversation about Chowaniki? I just want to know this guy.
Because you're the only one of us who has access to it.
Oh, I see. Oh, fair enough, then. Fair enough. Okay, that'll change. That'll change.
I wasn't insinuating anything.
It was
pure
once
logistics.
Once the PSP version comes out, then everyone will have access to it.
Then it'll be me. I'll take over. I'll take
it
over
will
that
have,
mantle.
It, the PSP version is without borders. I remind you of that.
Chowaniki without borders.
Well, that's not good for anybody, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, with that. Well, okay, so that's all settled now, and I'll get on to what I was playing quite a lot of on the flight, and I was hoping I'd get in some during just in the hotel or whatever, but I didn't because it was just completely full. So on the flight there, the flight back, and since I've been back, I've been playing a heavy amount of Bangaio Spirits for the DS. Because I'm reviewing that game, I'm in the process of beginning the review now, so I would have thought it'll be published up on the site by the time people hear this. And it's a very interesting game, and I heard John say how it's kind of not what he expected, and I've heard that sentiment expressed elsewhere as well. And I can understand that from the point of view if you expected something that was more like a sort of scrolling shooter. That obviously Treasure has done, games like that in the past, and many. It's not like that, very puzzly, very kind of. You've got sort of free range of movement and stuff like that, so it's all kind of a bit different from those sorts of things. And there's a lot of kind of omnidirectional firing, which is quite different from a scrolling shooter as well. I guess one comment I'd make is that it kind of feels like you're playing user-generated content. I mean, because there's a big part of the game that obviously is about creating your own levels, editing the levels, and this weird sound load exchange. But the actual game itself, there's no real particular structure. You've got all these levels that are just there, and it recommends you to play them in order. But I mean, I don't really see that there's any crafting of a difficulty curve there or anything. I mean, you could play them in any
order. Yeah, fuck it, I'll just put it here.
It's just all there in a kind of, and a lot of the levels are, quite tricky. Some of them, a great deal of them will start with you being killed.
That's always good there.
Well, I know it is. I mean, quite frequently it's like, okay, so you're in the middle of four giant cannons and they're about to kill you. And so it's a lot of trial and error and stuff like that. But because it's in these little bite-sized levels, it's not, you're never dealing with, okay, I'll do 10 minutes of a level that I've done really easily, and then there's this one bit at the end that I can't do. No, you never get anything like that, because they're these little small contained levels.
Levelettes?
Yeah, I guess you could, because they say 170 levels or whatever, and it is, but that some of them are very brief indeed. Like I said, it's if you don't die within the first 5 seconds, then you're going to beat it. Some of them.
So it has 170 levels, like WarioWare has 150 mini games.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, quite a few of them are quite substantial. I mean, there is variance. I mean, there are some on the very, very brief period, end of it, and then some that are not. But that's kind of the point, is that you've got this great diversity of things. You've got quite a lot of homages to stuff. Like, there's one level called P-Type, which is just a recreation of the sort of giant battleship level in the first R-Type. But just with Bangaio, stuff like that. And there's one that's called Marine Sisters, which looks sort of very Mario-ish. And stuff like that. It's all these kinds of things are the kind of things you would expect from something that is just created by people. Rather than, there's no kind of overarching kind of cohesive theme or progression or anything like that. It's just you've got the core gameplay and then a bunch of levels that they created for it.
Greg, actually, I'm pretty sure that there were more levels added for the American and European version.
Yeah, I think there were.
Since the Japanese release, and some of those might actually be user-created levels, which might kind of explain that vibe that you're getting.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely possible, because they would just blend in with all the other ones quite, yep. You know, because, yeah. Like I said, there isn't this kind of cohesive kind of feel. And what you don't have, which is quite interesting for a game by Treasure, who have made a game, I think, in Alien Soldier, which is almost entirely boss fights, although I've never played it, is any real boss fights. I mean, you have big enemies and stuff like that, but never like what you would consider a traditional boss fight with intricate attack patterns and things like that. There's not that in the game at all. So again, I mean, you know, user-generated content kind of fits in with that, because obviously you wouldn't have like big bosses or anything in a user-created level, presumably, and none of the levels have those anyway, so...
Oh, you can in Blastworks. You can create your own bosses in Blastworks.
But that's the kind of vibe. But yeah, for that, so it doesn't. If you expected something that's going to take you on a kind of visual journey or any of this kind of stuff, some of Treasure games have, it's not going to. It's pretty much just pure gameplay, really. And I mean, the gameplay is very good. There's a lot of levels that are creative. There's a lot of levels that are heavily sort of leveraged on puzzles. There's about 20 or so that are explicitly labeled as puzzle levels, but even the other ones, because so much of it tends to revolve around devising a strategy with regard to the weapon set that you choose, that is how you succeed. There's always a kind of a puzzle element to almost all the levels. I mean, one of the ones I particularly enjoyed is you have a freeze ability, which can just sort of stop the level for a certain amount of time, depending on when you charge it up. And there's one level where you're in the middle of a sort of tunnel that's wired to blow up, and what you have to do is freeze it almost instantaneously at the beginning of the level, so you just have a second head start on the sort of chain reaction, and then you have to dash to the end to get to the exit. Well, not the exit, it's like a target, and you blow that up, and then that's the exit, that's the end of the level. So it's all these things that, you know, it's not... If you expect something that's more like sort of what Treasure's best known for in terms of Gunstar Heroes, Ikaruga, Sin and Punishment, it's not really that much like that. I mean, it is crazy. It's your missiles and all sorts of, you know, it's all everywhere and blowing up, and it's very action-y, but it's quite different structurally.
Yeah, it almost has the feeling of kind of a side project or just something they did for fun. You know?
Yeah, I would say it's something you did for fun, because it's unconstrained. It's, you know, very much just like, you know, you've got the bare bones of it there. Presumably, I didn't play the original N64 version or the Dreamcast sort of port of that, but you've got the bare bones of it taken from that, and then they've just created all these different levels as sort of fun, different ways of exploiting the gameplay on DS, and then you've got this whole user-generated content angle, as you know, for people to sort of do the same, really. I think that's how they kind of approached it.
Yeah, it's very much for the fans. That's how it feels.
Yeah, I think so.
So, John, I know you've been playing this too, and you're next up in new business, so why don't you just smoothly shift this along?
Yeah, I'm playing a little bit of Bang.io. I've also been playing... I was like out of town for 4 or 5 days, so I didn't really play too much. But
okay.
I did try to chase Johnny's absolutely ridiculous Geometry Wars 2 scores. I'm constantly amazed by just how completely sad my scoreboards look. Like, you know, I'll have like 10 people on the deadline scoreboard, which is the one where you play for 3 minutes and get your highest score as you can. I think. Johnny's high score, I think your high score on that is like 36 million or something like that. So my scoreboard basically...
No, on that one it's 17
No,
million-ish.
I think you're 36, man. You're way up there, dude. Way up there.
On deadline, I think I'm 17. But I'll tell you the secret to deadline, or at least one good way to play that. There's probably several. But kind of, for one thing, make sure you get as many geoms as you can, like early on, when you still have enough room to actually fly all over the place. But if you stay in the middle of the screen, once it gets really crazy, there's just no way you're going to be able to handle everything. So a really good strategy is to pick a side of the level and just go back and forth across the border, because it cuts out so many access points for the enemies to get to you that you can basically just keep moving back and forth along the border, picking up the geoms as you kill things, and just from there it kind of comes down to just your accuracy. But it kind of takes a lot of the dodging out of it, so you can concentrate on shooting everything, and it's shockingly effective. So that's pretty much what I did. Also, I would say, I mean, you know, you have infinite lives in that mode, but if you die, it takes so much time for you to regenerate and for the enemies to start building back up again that it's much better to use a bomb. If you're about to die, use a bomb, because even though you don't get points, you can pick up some geoms, but the enemies will come back a lot faster and you'll save time that
way.
Yeah,
that's a killer, because, I mean, it...
So those are pretty much my two strategies, and that's all I did. And from there, it's just practice.
That's the thing. Let's see. So right now, I'm just about to download. I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit later on, but I'm just about to download Super Mario RPG. So I think I'll probably be playing a little bit of that from Virtual Console. And actually, the next game, I'm trying to knock off, like, my backlog is so big that I'm trying to knock off some of these games that I really should have played when they came out. And so I think this week I'm going to start playing the rest of Super Mario Galaxy. So... It's not, so I'm just going to, you know, I haven't really, that's one of those games where I just kind of, it's kind of a shame on me for not playing it because I feel like I'm kind of missing out since it is so good and it's one of the best titles for Wii, so.
How much of it did you play earlier?
I am not too much. I think I've maybe beat maybe two or three of the first areas. I mean, I'm at the
point, oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, I have like so much of the game to go. That's the whole thing. It's going to have to, it's going to be like a concerted effort for me. I couldn't even tell
you. Dude, it's going to be mind-blowing. And I think the more you play it, the more you'll get addicted to it and it'll be easier to keep going.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting with that game because when I got it and I was like, yeah, this is pretty cool, but for some reason it's so hard to get me into like the whole Mario thing, you know? It's just I don't know, man. I have a hard time jumping back into those games now, but I feel like probably once I do beat that game, I'll be like, wow, that was completely worthwhile.
So. But not a moment before.
No. Well, you know what I mean? It's like, I kind of feel like with the Mario games, I feel like I've played them all before kind of thing, you know? Like, one just becomes just like the other. I mean, I couldn't even make it through Mario Sunshine either. I couldn't make it through that just because it just really started to bore me after a while. So I'm kind of wary of that happening with this one, but I don't
Galaxy's
know
better
like
paced than Sunshine for sure.
Yeah, is it like quicker?
And the late game, say what?
Is it quicker pace? Like, is it a quicker pace kind of game?
I generally think so. Yeah, but I mean there are fewer places where it kind of you get bogged down and you're like just searching for coins and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The cool thing with Galaxy is the way it's structured. It always like you beat one level and it opens up two more. So if you get to a level you don't like, you should have plenty of other choices to go try something else. And you know, and there's nothing saying you have to beat every level anyway. So you don't really ever have to go back to the one you skipped if you just want to get to the end of the game.
Yeah, there were, I think there was one level I ended up getting like one star from simply because I hated it. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of, you know, and I just sort of was able to build up enough everywhere else I could just move around it. Which was nice. I mean, if I had to complete, you know, some objectives in that in that level to move on, I probably would have hated the game.
But
there's a lot of flexibility.
So I'm gonna get into that, and also there's a couple other games, a couple of the other, you know, big sort of Wii games that I want to get into, like, you know, older from the backlog, like No More Heroes. I'd like to play through that, and I'd like to also finish off Zack and Wiki. You know.
Yeah, I've been finishing that off very slowly. It gets kind of frustrating towards the end.
Yep. But that's about it. That's about it for me.
All right. James, you're next.
So I've decided I went out today and I decided I was going to buy a game with the remnants of my soul that I traded for review. And I went ahead and I bought the game that's been on my list for a long time, No More Heroes. Which, for whatever reason, kept getting pushed back in my, I'm going to get this game, and then we get pushed back by something else. So, given the fact we're in kind of a dry spell, pretty much in game releases as a whole, there's been a couple big games.
Yeah, but give it a couple weeks, because it's about to get crazy.
Yeah, I know, this is the downtime of the year, so I went ahead and I bought it. And, game is, you know, I fully expected it to be completely bizarre and surreal, because I played three of his games now, if you include this one, he being Suda51. It's just it never ceases to amaze me how bizarre all his games are.
Now, what was your other one other than Killer7?
Contact.
You played Contact, really?
Yeah.
Contact was a game that like people like Evan talked about a lot
before
it came out because they saw it at E3, and then No Closure, like nobody bought that game. So can you give us like a really brief rundown of what Contact is like, and is it any good? Because I honestly never really read much about it once it came out.
I'm just gonna say it's okay, and really, yeah. People thought it would be like Earthbound, but it's not. Yeah, I'm really not sure how to describe that game because it is kind of weird, and I played it a while back. But you know, if you find it cheap and you kind of like RPGs and you kind of enjoy humor, even though some of that humor is probably a little dated. Since it was very topical humor at the time.
Yeah.
I think there was a shout out to Gaff in that game.
There were a lot of
weird maybe
things.
In the credits.
There was a giant enemy crabs joke.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of little weird in references to things. You know, it's not a bad game. You could do worse. So if you find it pretty cheap, go ahead and give it a shot. It's not surreal like the other game I played of his, Killer 7, and now this. Which is
Killer 7, I'm still waiting on from Carl Castaneda.
Killer 7
he told me over a week ago he was going to ship it to me, so we shall see.
Killer 7 is just unbelievably weird.
Yeah.
And this is weirder, honestly. I mean, not...
No More Heroes, you mean?
Yeah, not in the same, like, surreal, bizarre references to death weird. Just in how completely over the top in everything it does weird.
I found it to be kind of like an American 80s cartoon.
Except for the fact...
I don't know if that makes any sense.
Except for the fact there's blood everywhere.
Yeah, it's really bloody.
But,
yeah.
You know, there's lots of little weird things. Like, you know, Travis, the main character, Travis Touchdown, swears more than I think this podcast does. And he doesn't even swear effectively. Like, one time he calls somebody a fuckhead.
Yeah.
Which is an absolutely awful insult in that it's just stupid. But
yeah.
But he goes, fuckhead! And then he proceeds to say something along the lines of, in sort of like a swear replacement, to seemingly clean up his language, which is now completely pointless gesture, screams something like, I'm putting the strawberry on the shortcake. As opposed... and when he did that, I was like, what?
Have you done the second assassination yet?
I just completed that. That was my...
Okay, the guy in the baseball field?
Yes.
Because that shit was where I was like, what's going on
here?
When he's singing like a karaoke. He's got a karaoke machine out there, and he's singing a song to the microphone and projecting it out to this empty baseball stadium.
Yeah, well, you didn't...
And it's a really creepy song, too. Like, makes no sense.
You didn't catch why he's out there? Or...
He explained something about it was always his dream to sing in a baseball field.
He always wanted to sing in a big stadium because he wanted to be a singer. And the association, you know, people who do the assassins, arranged it for him by renting the facility. And the joke was that the association paid for it using Travis Touchdown's entry fee he had to pay to get into this fight.
Yeah.
Which he spent the entire dialogue bitching about the fact that he paid for this. But it's just sort of like, you know, building on his character as a completely irrational individual who thought, I need a job, let's go be an assassin, and maybe I'll get laid because of it.
Okay, so what do you think of the controls? Because I think this is a rare action game that does motion control right on Wii.
Yeah, it doesn't overdo its motion controls.
Mm-hmm. It's not optional, but it's not intrusive.
Right.
It actually feels good. It actually adds a little something that wouldn't be there without motion controls. And that seems like it would be such a simple thing to do, but like almost nobody gets it right.
When you're doing motion controls in that game, just to explain, it's only used in like if you're doing it in combat, it's only an emphasis move. It's not just conventional fighting. That's just mapped to the A button. And then the only way that uses motion controls is depending on if you're pointing horizontally or up determines what kind of attack he does, either a high attack or a low attack. So that's pretty, you know, that's pretty passive use of it. And a lot of times, I'm just sort of sitting there with it at a 45-degree angle, and he's kind of alternating between them. And if I find that one's being blocked, I just sort of dip down to the other one. All right.
Yeah, I kind of was talking more about the way you finish your combo.
Yeah, well, I was going to
say. Like, when you execute the guy, because that feels really satisfying.
Yeah, it's...
And it's totally simple, but it's awesome.
Yeah, what I was saying was it's more of an emphasis in how it uses the motion controls. You know, it's a finality thing. It doesn't... It's not in general combat, but it does come up in that if you want to... When you finish somebody off, it gives you a direction to swing the Wii remote. And it's not like if you screw it up, you know, if you move it a little bit in one direction, you fail that. You kind of have to actively fail it, I think. But
yeah,
when you move in
that... It's pretty accurate. Yeah. I never had a problem with the recognition at all.
Yeah, when you move in that direction indicated on the screen, you basically eviscerate that person in a mannerism that seems appropriate for swinging in that direction. So if you swing, like, right, Travis sends his beam saber from right to left and lobs the guy's head off. Or if you do, like, up, he, like, chops the guy in half.
Yeah.
But...
From the crotch up.
Yes. Yes. I kind of wish that the strong attacks, which you do by holding and charging with the A button, were kind of mapped to the controls in the same way. But I guess that would make it too easy to use them. It feels like that it would be more direct if you did it that way, but I don't know. The other way it uses the motion controls is for throws and suplexes, in which you grab the person and then you get these directions on how you should move both the Wii Remote and the nunchuck. And if you follow the pattern they give you, you do something crazy from professional wrestling.
Yeah. Those are pretty optional, but I think there's at least one boss where they're really effective.
They were pretty effective in the second boss.
Yeah.
Not quite as effective as maybe I would have liked, but he was kind of a pain in the ass to kill anyway. And yeah.
A lot of them kind of come down to your patience,
yeah,
and your persistence.
And there's the only other really element of the combat controls is occasionally special bosses have button press events. And mm-hmm. those can be, you know, just as frustrating as they are in any other button press event or quick time event, depending on what you want to call them.
Yeah.
And because the game uses these icons, it can be a little bit difficult the first time through to figure out what they're wanting if you're really trying to go quick. But nothing major. So the combat, in a way, is pretty visceral. I imagine it could get kind of old after a while, but what doesn't?
I found it, surprisingly, it didn't get old to me.
Oh, okay.
Like, I still enjoyed it by the end of the game. I was surprised, because I thought I would get sick of it, but I never really did.
I have noticed they do mix it up a little bit already, because in the baseball stadium level, you know, yeah, most of the enemies you do just chop in half for a while, but there's these two places where you come into the room and it's a bunch of enemies lined up and one of them is a pitcher and he throws a baseball at you and you get three chances to hit it back using your beam sword by like swinging it like a baseball bat. And the harder you swing it, the farther the ball will go if you make contact. And you can actually knock them all down and kill them like that, which is...
Yeah, that gets really challenging if you knock down all but one or two, because they're all pitchers, and so if you don't knock them all down the first time, the last couple guys in the line will throw at you, and it takes much longer for the ball to get to you,
bet.
And so it changes the timing of it, pretty tricky.
Yeah, I got all of them the first time, and then missed the first two pitches on the second one and freaked out and only got, like, two. So then on the third, after the third pitch, it's basically whoever's left you have to fight. Well, I had, like, nine in the room I had to fight at one time.
Yeah.
Which kind of turned it into craziness. I'm not far enough into the game to experience what I've heard described as the epic grind to get money to enter fights. But
it's not that bad.
I did like the fact that the first one, Travis had to go punch trees until coconuts fell out and then deliver them to a guy who said that, quote, "Coconuts here are more valuable than a human life."
Yeah.
It was just like...
Those jobs are all... They're all equally stupid. Some are a little more fun than others, but they're all pretty short, you know. They're not that tedious.
Yeah, just the fact that he's standing there punching the crap out of a tree until coconuts fall. You know, that was amusing a little bit, but it really got funny when one of them actually hit him in the head. And he like grabs his head and goes, "Ah!" I just thought that was an interesting way of dealing with the money collection element. I gotta imagine that, though, some of them are probably pretty boring. I know one of them is like picking up trash on the side of the road or crazy stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't even remember all of them. They're all pretty tedious.
My only real gripe with the game has been some graphical issues and camera control stuff. Or I've had the camera kind of swing into a wall, and then I'm kind of stuck fighting with like a side perspective. And sometimes when you're going fast on your motorcycle, the game kind of chugs, and what it immediately reminded me of was FMVs on early PlayStation games, how they kind of ran at like 20 frames per second.
Yeah.
And I was going through that. I'm like, oh my god, I'm watching one of the Resident Evil cinematics. Because it felt just like that. Like almost.
It gets pretty slow.
It
yeah.
was exactly. And it's kind of. Well, it's not kind of. It's pretty unforgivable because the game's pretty sparse graphically.
Yeah, the bicycle parts are the worst part of the game.
Yeah, I'm.
It just doesn't. The engine can't handle it. The controls are terrible.
See, I haven't had that much trouble controlling the bicycle. I'm kind of doing okay with it. The only real problem I have with the bicycle is sometimes I'll hit the brake hard and I'll stop and then I'll hold down the accelerator and he does this thing where he pops a wheelie and like charges it up and then he hits the ground and goes flying. I have plowed him into more walls doing that than I think I've actually killed enemies so far.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm probably doing it on purpose now because it is really funny to watch.
I've got a question about this, actually, just a minute, because this is something I considered getting, but it wasn't going to be the big drought before Brawl, which ceased to exist for me because I got a freeloader. But how important would you say the whole gore, visceral element is to the game? Because the European version doesn't have that.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's like the Japanese version where they turn into like black dust and coins and stuff. And I'm just, it's not this because you haven't played the other version. It's kind of a difficult question for you to answer directly.
Well,
but
I can visualize it because enemies do turn into the black dust and coins, but they also spurt blood like you've tapped into an oil well.
And I can only imagine there's other things too. But yeah, that being the most obvious.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they'd show the animation of him cutting someone's head off. But I think a lot of it is done. A lot of it was done because Goichi Suda had this bizarre like perspective on American culture, that or Western culture in general, that is just so off kilter that the violence was part of the whole image that he was trying to get across. So that says
is it kind of almost integral to the game, even though it's something that seems superfluous, like just silliness gore, but you know, it's all part of the atmosphere that he's trying to evoke.
It adds to the atmosphere, I would say, and with Travis's stupid lines like fuckhead. Yeah,
I think it's kind of like watching Total Recall on USA Network. I don't know if that applies to you, Greg, but yeah, it's sort of like watching a good R-rated movie on cable TV in America where they take out the sex scenes and they replace about half of the swearing with overdubs.
But
do you still get the story? You still get the point of the movie, but you kind of feel cheated
a little bit. Yeah. It'd probably be
like
Kill Bill without all the blood. You know, like that's part of its style.
You know, yeah, like I mean, No More Heroes is very similar to Kill Bill, actually, in terms of that
style. I would say that the game would probably still be amusing, because only part of the game's humor comes from just the over-the-top violence. I would say Travis Touchdown is one of the unintentionally funniest characters. Well, it was intentional for the creators, but he doesn't intend to be funny.
He is a character, yeah.
He's just kind of pathetic, actually.
Like, the scene where... I think it's after the first mission. He goes over to one of his posters of those witches and kisses them and goes, "Moe." And he smiles at the camera. It's really funny, but at the same time, he's really pathetic.
You know what? In some ways, he reminds me of Stuntman Mike from Death Proof. I don't know if you guys have seen that movie.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
you should.
It's Tarantino, so you should see it.
He reminds
me he does kind of remind me of that Kurt Russell character a little bit, now that I think about it.
He's so... I don't want to say stupid, because he does have... He's so simple, might be the best word. All of his decisions come down to essentially the same two motivations of, is this cool, and will I get laid because I do it? And...
All right, well, we probably need to get moving with the discussion a little bit. Finish up, Greg.
Case of Greg, or pretty much any of the European listeners, if you're interested in the game for what it is, you know, at least halfway decent action game on the Wii, I'd say it's probably more than that, with some sort of ham-fisted attempt at open world and some pretty good writing, good in that it's bad, intentionally bad writing, I guess would be the way of putting it, it's certainly worth the purchase, especially if it's discounted there like it is here now.
Yeah,
the blood loss of the blood probably does diminish somewhat from the character of the game, but it's not a deal breaker.
Yeah,
fair enough.
Okay, well, so I'll finish up and I'll try to go quickly through this. I've got three games I'll talk about in new business. First, I played through a lot of Ease Book 1 and 2 this past week. I had just downloaded it right before we recorded last week, but I've played a good 15-20 hours of it at this point, and I'm probably halfway through book 2 now, I would definitely recommend it for just about anybody. I mean, if you like Zelda games, I think you'll find things to like about it, although if you're not accustomed to RPG things like grinding for levels a little bit, then you might get a little annoyed by that, but I think you can probably burn through it, you know? If you're into RPGs, I definitely think you'll like it, but it's actually quite different from a typical RPG because of the combat system and the pacing and stuff is a little odd. But overall, it's a very entertaining game, and it's a pretty awesome value for $8. I mean, all told, the two games together end up being around 30 hours or more. So for $8, you're not going to get a much better deal than that. You might get one this week, but yeah, it's a really good game. So if you're looking for something in that vein, if you're looking for kind of like a Zelda-ish game, then you should definitely check out Ease. It's really good. I finally got my 400 Microsoft points from signing up for Gamefly, so I combined that with 400 I had on my account and unlocked Galaga Legions, which I'd had the trial for a couple weeks. And I haven't played it a ton since I unlocked it because I'm honestly not head over heels for it, but
it's pretty cool, though.
Like it. It is cool. I mean, it's very flashy. It's fun for a few minutes, but it's not something I can play for more than about 20 minutes because there's just not that much to it. It's not super addicting like Geometry Wars where I could just play for hours and lose track of time. It's not like that at all.
It kind of reminds me of the Pac-Man remake that they have on there where it's like, it's cool to play for maybe about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and then you're just, okay, let's move on to the next thing. But you keep coming back to it, though.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. And it's very hard. I haven't made it through all 5 stages yet. I think on Adventure I can get through most of stage 3 before I run out of lives. But it's really fun, and it's very interesting looking. I have to say, though, it really doesn't have anything to do with the original Galaga.
No.
I mean, it just doesn't. I mean, and I'm a big Galaga fan, and I really love Galaga. I even have the NES version on Virtual Console, which is kind of a crappy port of the arcade. But Galaga Legions, like, I'm not even sure how they can get away with putting that name in the title, because it really doesn't share anything in common with the original Galaga. But regardless, it is a cool game. I just think, comparing it to something like Geometry Wars, which is sort of the same genre, cost the same, came out in the similar time frame, it looks pretty bad in comparison to that. But then again, Geometry Wars 2 is probably the best $10 game I ever bought in my life. So it's not a fair comparison. But yeah, I don't know. I'll be going back to it from time to time, but I don't love it, that's for sure. But it's good. And then I got Assassin's Creed from Gamefly, and I think I got it Friday, and today's Monday, and I'm just about finished with it. So I've played it pretty heavily this weekend. It's a holiday weekend. I didn't really have anything to do except watch football. So I played it pretty heavily, and it's just really addictive, pretty amazing game. And, you know, I kind of heard from the outside some of the comments and some of the reviews and things back when this came out last fall. And it seemed like it was a love it or hate it thing. I mean, some people seemed really head over heels for it. Some people seemed very unimpressed by it. And, you know, it was getting scores in the range of like either 9 or 10 or 6 or 7.
Yeah, and I know Zach really liked it. He just played through it recently and he really liked it.
I'm finding it hard to understand how anybody could score it in the 6 or 7 range. I think it's kind of amazing, honestly. Like, I really, really, really like it. Mm-hmm. And, like, maybe if you're a collect-a-thon completist kind of person, it'll drive you crazy. Because there's, like, hundreds of these little flags hidden all over this really, really expansive world. I mean, it has 3 open world cities, plus this like open countryside connecting them. So there is a ton of real estate, and it has these little flags hidden in all these little tiny nooks and crannies all over this environment. So if you get obsessed with finding that kind of stuff, it could definitely drive you crazy. I realized pretty early on that I was never, ever, ever going to find them all, so I just kind of stopped trying. And then I could just enjoy it at the pace that it's meant to be played, you know? Mm-hmm. But,
well, yeah,
I'm really, really, really into it.
From what I can recollect of some of the criticisms, obviously this is not something that was on my radar because I don't own the console, but the most severe thing that sounded sort of fundamentally iffy was the idea that obviously it's ostensibly quite a stealth-focused game, but if it all kind of went wrong and your cover was kind of blown and stuff, that it didn't really matter that much, you could still kind of blunder your way through it. Have you got any experience of those kinds of scenarios?
Basically, if you get caught or if you get spotted by the guards and they start chasing you, it's a major inconvenience. So you can, and some things will be closed off until you get away from them or kill them all. So some things you just can't do until you hide, you know, or kill all the guys pursuing you. Some things you can still do, but they're a lot more annoying because you have these guys. And as you get later in the game, the guards get a lot faster and more cunning, and they will climb up buildings and chase after you. So it becomes actually very difficult to hide from them and to escape later in the game. And I'm very close to the end right now, so the guards are really fucking annoying at this point. Because it makes me want to play more stealthily because it's such a hassle if I do get caught to get away from them.
Because, I mean, that's obviously...
So no, I don't agree with that criticism.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously how it's supposed to work, something like this. It needs to incentivize you adequately to do that. I think the other one other bizarre example I can recall, something like there's a case where you're trying to assassinate a guy, and like basically if it all goes wrong, all the guards start like trying to shoot you or whatever, or something. Not shoot you because it's wherever it's set in the past, isn't it? So
well,
I'm misremembering that. But they started. Mm-hmm.
That was another one that people seemed to hate. The plot twist, as it were.
But mm-hmm. but the point was that all the guard guys started attacking you, but that somehow left the person that was being protected originally exposed, which meant it was actually easier to kill him or something bizarre like that. I've heard these complaints that
it kind of just depends. Like I can see that happening, but it depends a lot on how the AI works, and the character's behavior is not scripted. So whether the target will be surrounded or not, usually the target will kind of just pile in with the guards and try to kill you along with the guards.
Yeah, that seems
so you'll get in this big battle trying to kill the person, but you can't easily target who you're attacking at any one time because there are 10 guys surrounding you. So it ends up, you know, like eventually you'll kill the guy, but it's difficult, you know?
Right.
I don't know if that answers.
Well, no,
the question.
He does actually join in rather than sort of take cover. So he's still sort of.
Oh yeah, usually. Yeah, I mean, usually the guys you're, or at the very least, he'll run away.
Okay.
And you'll have to chase him, and then you have all these guards chasing you while you chase the target, and again, it's very challenging.
Right,
so,
okay.
I found it to be a pretty challenging game, and not something that's easy to exploit. Because I've tried exploiting
and well, as long as it,
I haven't
that's
found
the
a good
main
way
thing,
to exploit
isn't it?
It.
As long as it's not sort of like you can achieve these things.
Yeah, I
in
think
a
the stealth
way.
Consequences are greater in this than say Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah,
where,
in Metal
you
Gear,
know,
it's
like
so
if
easy
you...
to you know just kill all the guards, pull out a huge gun, and just start blowing people away, and then
yeah,
hide.
Or just hide.
So
I
easy
mean,
yeah.
because the guards in Metal Gear in the Metal Gear Solid games, they're morons. Clearly, I mean.
Yeah, they're so dumb.
I think the guards are a lot smarter in this, and Assassin's Creed doesn't have like vision cones and things, mm-hmm. so you can't easily tell who can see you and who can't. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to use common sense,
right.
And just play it more like if you were actually there, rather than stare at a radar, because there is no radar.
Right. Yeah.
And I think we kind of mentioned it earlier, but the plot twist I think kind of turned some people off who weren't expecting it when they got.
What plot twist are you referring to?
You don't want to spoil
the fact
it,
that you're
it?
Actually in the present. The fact that you're actually playing a guy
yeah,
in the present
who's
who
are,
reliving
who are,
these memories from
that.
The past. Because that's
yeah,
revealed
it wasn't
in the first
in the
2 minutes of the
in
game.
The game's promotion.
it was revealed in the press demos that started over a year and a half before. No, it wasn't in the TV commercial. But other than that, the game, it's not a twist at all. That is the premise of the game. So, I mean, again, totally ludicrous criticism. I mean, the only criticism I've heard that I would say is actually fair is that you kind of do some of the same activities over and over again, like you're interrogating, you're eavesdropping.
I remember Chris Cole remarked about those basically three things you did in the game, and they repeated
It's
them.
True, but doing those things is actually a fairly small part of the game. So you blow through them, at least the way I'm playing, I blow through those activities pretty quickly, and then get on with the actual assassination, which is a lot more interesting and very, you know, is unique for each person that you're killing. So, again, like, I guess it depends on the way you play the game, or maybe if you're not good at those things, you have to keep retrying them, it might get annoying, but I play, you know, like an interrogation takes me 2 minutes and then I'm done with it. And then I go do another, I do an eavesdropping and another thing, and then I'm ready to go kill the guy. So, I mean, all told, the so-called investigation portion, it takes about 10 minutes out of a total of at least an hour to go kill a guy. Right. By the time you get there, you explore the city a little bit. You know, you go do the investigation, then you go track the guy down, then you kill him, then you escape from the guards and get back to your base. All that takes about an hour. So, like, this stuff about eavesdropping and stuff is a very small part of that. I just, to me, it's not a problem at all. But, yeah, anyway, I didn't mean to turn this into, like, a giant defense of the game, but what blew me away right off the bat is not only the technical prowess of the graphics, because it is probably the best-looking game I've ever seen, really, that I've played personally. The graphics technology is just mind blowing, but also the art, the world that they create. For one thing, it's a really cool setting that is not really ever used in video games. I mean, you're in the Holy Land during the Crusades, so like 1100, 1200 AD, and it's a really interesting time. And you spend your time moving between among Damascus, Acre, and Jerusalem. And the three cities, they're not as distinct as I would like, but they definitely have different vibes to them, especially Acre because it's on the ocean, so like it has piers, it has docks and boats you can go out to, and it just has a little bit different vibe than the other two. But the people talk differently in each city, they react differently, the buildings, the architecture is a little bit different in each one, and it's just a really convincing world. And the reason that I'm even bringing this up is that it reminds me so much of Zelda. Basically, Hyrule is kind of like a fantasy version of this. And so it's really interesting to kind of look on the other side of the mirror in Assassin's Creed and see this is kind of like the basis for what they created Hyrule around. And of course, it's built with much better technology than you have in any Zelda game. So it's really gorgeous, and just amazing to look at. You know, like the environments don't repeat. So you're going through it's sort of almost like Shadow of the Colossus, where like you don't really see like the same wall here and the same wall over here. Like there's always something interesting to look at, and it's just kind of like gorgeous. It's just beautiful. It's just a surreal experience to ride on your horse again. Tied into Zelda, but riding on your horse through these trails and through the mountains, and then you go through this little village on your way to the giant city, and it's pretty amazing. And again, like the new Prince of Persia game that's coming out this fall, which I'm super excited about now after playing Assassin's Creed, it just makes me really excited that people are taking this kind of Zelda-ish world, environment, and in some respects, gameplay, and doing different things with it, because Zelda at this point is becoming a little stale and rehashed every time. It's like the core idea is still amazing, but Nintendo's not doing that much with the idea to push it forward or to try different things, to go different places with it. And I'm just really glad that a company like Ubisoft is, especially this one particular team. So, I think if you're into Zelda games and you haven't tried out Assassin's Creed, you should, because, you know, the game, the core action of the game plays quite differently than Zelda, but the way the world is put together and the way you explore the world is very similar, and I think you might find it very interesting. So that's my diatribe on Assassin's Creed, and I think that ends New Business, unless you guys have any closing remarks.
No. Nope.
All right. Well, all right, so now we're going to take a break, and we'll be back on the flip side with DLC Mondays and a whole boatload of your listener mail. So we'll be right back. Okay, and we are back. We'll kick off segment two with DLC Mondays really quickly. This week, pretty good. We've got My Aquarium for WiiWare. It's only 500 points, and I know I get shit in the forums for making fun of WiiWare games a lot. I actually think this looks pretty cool. It's not something I would download, but this is the kind of thing that you would never ship and no one would ever buy on a disc, so it's perfect for a downloadable service, and some people would probably get good use out of this thing.
Yeah, this came out in Europe some weeks ago. Well, I haven't downloaded it, but there was feedback. You know, people have reviewed it and things. So it's been generally positive. It's obviously not like a traditional game or anything. It's kind of like a relaxation sort of with aquatic life sort of thing. But you know, it apparently it's pretty effective for what it is, and 500 points, so it's no big outlay.
It seems to me like something you'd put on, like when people are over and you're just talking or playing a board game or something, or maybe like put on in the background when you're doing yoga in your living room or something. I mean, it's not something you're gonna put in there and just stare at.
But if you're doing yoga, wouldn't you be using it with Wii Sports? I mean, not Wii Sports, Wii Fit. If you want to spend
not necessarily, Wii Fit doesn't have that much yoga.
If you're doing exactly what Nintendo wants you to do, yes.
Exactly. Nintendo doesn't want you to look at virtual fish.
Yep.
If for some reason you've emblazoned your mobile phone with Nintendo just in the hope they would one day make one or something, you need their permission to do anything.
I think that the whole virtual fish tank thing though is kind of lost its charm because it's been done so many times before.
Yeah, on the PC especially.
You know, I remember the first...
There's not one on Wii, except for this
one. But there's one on my LCD picture frame. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
We're not exactly going into uncharted territory here.
No, of course not.
I imagine it's more interactive than that. That's what I see anyway.
I would hope so.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can feed the fish, and you can choose the fish you put in there, but other than that, I don't think... It's not so much something that you're meant to interact with, like, say, Seaman,
so
the Dreamcast
game.
No, it's not a game. It's like basically like a glorified screensaver with music, and you can customize it and change what's in the aquarium as far as fish and decorations and stuff, and then you let it run, in the background while you do other things. So, I mean, it's not that useful for me, but for some people it might be. And I watched a video on Nintendo Channel today, and it looks nice. So, I don't know. If that's worth $5 to you, go for it. I'm just trying to throw out a peace stick to Insano Lord or whoever it is in the forums who keeps bashing me.
The appeaser strikes again.
I know.
You are highly manipulable.
Can we call him another wrong British Prime Minister? Can we call him Margaret Thatcher?
I don't think she was
an appeaser. Yeah,
because he's the one that last time someone was accused of an appeaser called them Churchill.
Oh right, yeah. I suppose if you want to play that game, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, right. I know on the forums I criticize this a bit, but I mean, end of the day, can't we just all get along? I mean,
no.
The fact that we can get this something probably like this on the PC for free, and they're charging $5 for it. Hey, if you want to pay $5, if you want to waste $5 on this thing, that's totally cool, man. Enjoy.
Exactly. I mean, my problem with WiiWare is WiiWare games that basically try to sell you something that you probably already own on Wii, or you certainly could already own on Wii. Stuff like the billiards games and the friggin' the shooting games and just like really simple stuff that and the you know darts and crap like that. It's already contained in other packages that a lot of casual people already own anyway. So I just don't find the appeal of it. My aquarium is at least unique on the platform.
Yeah. It's unique.
If you want an aquarium, this is the way to go.
I just think 500 weep points is a bit too much for it. That's all. I could see maybe.
Yeah, well, one thing.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the pricing floor. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I would kind of think it's probably more like a 300 thing.
What I wonder about is whether or not that these sort of like releases, like in this case, all right, we have one WiiWare title, correct? Mm-hmm. And it's My Aquarium. Why did Nintendo not allow another WiiWare title to come out this week? And we know there are some more still in, you know, in holding.
Well, I mean, we don't know that
for sure. We know that there are a couple that aren't quite there.
I mean, Johnny, you brought this up last week in terms of, like, you have... In Japan, it's very different because you do get things like the Space Invaders and Alien Crush being released simultaneously, whereas in the US, they do seem to make an effort to relatively sort of isolate the WiiWare releases and, you know, trickle them out very sort of deliberately. It's quite different, isn't it, in the US?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think...
Yeah, in Japan they have weeks with no WiiWare stuff. And you're not going to have that in America. I mean, you can say they've been very consistent. There has been at least one per week since launch. And it's going to continue that way, but that means we're going to have a lot of weeks where we get stuff like My Aquarium that you probably aren't interested in.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that in this case, though, they could have released another game alongside it. And maybe... Or a game alongside it. And maybe they should have.
Maybe they should have, but maybe they figured they didn't want to do that because they were releasing two good virtual console games. And the first one is Clue Clue Land. Now, not an amazing game by any means, okay? But for anybody who hasn't played it, let me just point out, this is a Miyamoto NES game, and it's probably the coolest Pac-Man clone ever, in my opinion. Now, I haven't played Devil World, so that one might be better. That's the Japan-only Miyamoto Pac-Man clone game. But Clue Clue Land is actually like a really cool variation on Pac-Man where you don't have a maze that you're going through. You're kind of creating the maze as you go through. You're flying across these things, and the way it's controlled is really cool because you don't just push a direction and go like in Pac-Man. You basically, when you push left or right, your creature holds out his arm, and it'll catch onto a hook. And so once it catches on the hook, you'll start to spin around it, and when you let go, you'll fly off in that direction. So I think it's a little more like Pixel Junk Eden if you've played that. You're perpetually moving and in some direction, and so basically all you can do is alter your direction by grabbing these hooks and swinging around. And the goal is to uncover this pattern of gold bars. As you fly across them, they'll be uncovered. And they're little enemies, that like sea urchins that you shoot sonar at. It's actually really cool. I like it a lot. I played it when I was a kid. So, anybody else have any experience
I've played
with
it. I can't remember what I've played it in. It was in something, and it wasn't...
Animal Crossing,
yeah,
maybe?
It was probably Animal Crossing. But there's also a version of it in, I think it's the Wii version of WarioWare that is pretty...
Oh, yeah.
I think you're right about that.
It's like a two-second version of it, yeah.
It does give you a pretty good idea of what the game is.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, it's a good game if that's, you know, something you remember playing as a kid and you're willing to pop down $5 for. I can't imagine that... If you're not familiar with the game, you get a whole lot of joy out of it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a nostalgia pick.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad game. It is very simple and primitive. It's an early NES game. I think it was a launch title, actually.
I think it was within the first year, at least.
Yeah, but I do still think it's fun, actually. I do like it. I think, as I recall, it has catchy music, too.
Yes,
so
it does.
Not, you know, it's probably in the recommended for fans territory, but it's not bad,
no.
For sure.
It just means that you probably, if you've never played the game before, it's probably not worth you going and dropping the money on, unless
probably
you sound intrigued
not.
By it.
Yeah. So, but it certainly doesn't compare to Super Mario RPG, which is the other game, and I said last week I expected this to come this week, and it did. I mean, it was out in Europe last week, so now we have it. Now the whole world has access to Super Mario RPG. There's no excuse for not playing it, because it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like one of the best games on Virtual Console yeah. now. It's
like
amazing.
I said on our forums, if you do not like Super Mario RPG, you're a communist. That's really all there is to it. You might as well just move to China. Move to China and leave the freedom-loving peoples here to eat their freedom fries and play Super Mario RPG. You pinko scum.
Hmm. Wow. John,
it's pretty great.
John, calm down.
That's about as hype as I get.
I'm telling you to calm down.
That's my James Jones
I played
rant.
It for a little over an hour today. It definitely holds up.
I've gotten a little amount of time in. It did actually come out the day before I left for my trip. So
oh, okay.
I downloaded it that day, got a tiny little bit in, and then I've had a little since I got back, although I've mostly been with Bangaya because that's for review. But this is actually, Mario RPG has a strange place. It's before now, it was the only game I've ever owned but not played because I owned it. But because I've had a Super Famicom, and there were some weird converter issues with that, in terms of because it used some stuff in the cartridge or whatever, I guess some extra stuff, it meant that I couldn't actually play it and I had to return it. And then a few months, and I never really got round to sort of like getting a different converter or anything, because a couple of months later I had the Japanese Nintendo 64. And so I finally got back to playing it now. And it seems really, really good so far. I haven't got very far into it, as I said. But you could see how it's really written the playbook for all the subsequent Mario RPGs. I mean, even though they haven't been developed by Square as this one was, they have very much followed their lead in many ways with sort of the way you choose a particular attribute to level up when you level up, the timing presses, the little sort of with special attacks that require you to say button bash or something like that. All the elements are there that have been taken on in the future.
Yeah, and there's also the fact that as you move around in the towns and in the overworld, you can jump.
Yeah,
because
it actually has a run button.
It
has a run button as well, which is very Mario.
That's right. Yeah. You can run and jump, and so I think what makes Super Mario RPG special is that Square, you know, I was really afraid that they were going to take it and give Mario a helmet and a sword and make it Final Fantasy. And what it does is it takes, it's not a stupid RPG. It's not like a super simplified RPG or anything, but it's very accessible. But what's amazing about it is that it takes so many elements of Mario platformer games, Super Mario games, and integrates those so well into the RPG genre, which you wouldn't think would work at all. And yet they find all these really clever ways to do it that are actually really fun, and a lot of them hold up over the entire course of the game. It's a pretty amazing achievement in game design in like mashing up genres, in my opinion. And it totally holds up. The graphics aren't great. They're like that pre-rendered.
Yeah,
Donkey Kong
it was very,
thing,
very,
and I think
very de rigueur at the time, but not. I don't.
Yeah,
think
it hasn't aged well, but the music is still really good, and the game is still really fun. Actually, the writing is excellent. I was surprised at how funny
it's very
it is.
Tongue in cheek.
Like, you know.
Yeah, and it sort of started gag that went into Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga about his jumping being like the main sort of defining thing about him. So again, it really is seminal for all of those games, even though they changed hands with the developers. And one thing I was surprised, jumping works really well when you consider it's an isometric game. Because there have been isometric games that have not worked very well at all. Whereas this seems pretty solid from what I've played so far.
Yeah, because the jumps are generally not that demanding.
Yeah, it's all in the design. But it works.
Right. I mean, if you miss a jump, you just go try it again. You're not going to die. You know, there's probably no penalty whatsoever. Whereas, like, say in a game like Landstalker, which, first of all, doesn't have as good a jumping controls as this anyway, but it's an isometric game with a lot of platforming in the dungeons, and they are brutal. If you miss a jump, and there are no shadows, you know, nothing like that, so if you miss a jump, you die. And you have to replay like a significant portion of the game, so it's just infuriating. And you don't have that in Mario RPG. I mean, nothing really is that difficult or annoying about the game. It's just, it doesn't coddle you either. It's not a super easy game, but it's accessible. You know, like it's totally great as a like my first RPG.
Yeah.
But it totally stands up even if you already like RPGs and you've played things a lot more complicated. It's not insulting to RPG fans, it's still really fun, and it's not going to bother you at all to play this, you know? Whereas I do understand people who have a problem playing through Paper Mario. If you're a big RPG fan, Paper Mario is much simpler than this. And I don't want to turn this into a war between those two games like it happened in the forums, because I like both. But I think Mario RPG is a much better balance between for old and new RPG fans. That's
why. I mean, the Paper Mario games are more...
It is.
They are more platformers with heavy RPG elements than they are straight RPGs like Super Mario RPG is.
Yeah.
Well, they said that's always kind of interesting, the fact that because those games, the Paper Mario games, they don't have the trademark sort of Mario Run button, do they? I don't think so.
No, they don't.
Whereas this
but they
does,
have a little
so
more.
I just thought, I don't know, for some reason,
the,
I found that very kind of pleasing that it did, because that to me is one of the defining things about Mario, and it's one of the biggest differences with, say, something like Yoshi's Island. Yoshi doesn't have a run button.
That's true.
Builds up automatically.
You know, the funny thing is, after Super Mario RPG, Square started putting run buttons in a lot of their own RPGs.
Yeah.
In fact, it's one of the features they added for Final Fantasy IV on DS.
Yes.
Oh.
Or you can go in the menu and set it so that you run by default, and then it becomes a walk button, which you will never use.
Yeah, I think...
So it speeds up the game a lot.
Yeah, I think the first game I noticed that in was probably somewhere in that area. It was like their next Final Fantasy after 4.
Mm-hmm. Well, in FF6, you can get an accessory.
Right,
and as long as one person in your group has it equipped, you run about 3 times as fast.
Yeah.
Or if you have a game genie, you can turn on hyperspeed.
Yes.
Where you pretty much warp across the town. Yeah, I did some weird shit back on Super Nintendo with my game genie. I used to hack codes for Street Fighter 2 so you could do every special move in the air and stuff like that.
Game genie was brilliant. I had the NES one. I seem to recall doing something like... Like in Mario, where you jumped and basically there was no gravity anymore, so you just jump and you disappear.
Moon jumps, yeah. You could jump over the flagpole and totally bug it out.
Yeah. It was,
there's a lot of great stuff.
And it was gone.
There's a lot of great Game Genie codes. So anyway, that's DLC Mondays. Go download Mario RPG.
Yep.
Now, do it, everyone.
I was just going to say, Europe-wise, I think we're finishing up that Hanabi Import Festival. Last week we got Biomiracle Bukut Upa, whatever it is. The baby game. Konami baby game, and Dig Dug, which I think the original Dig Dug did come out in America, but it didn't come out in Europe or something. I don't know. But
no, it didn't come out in America either.
Oh, didn't it? Oh, okay.
It's an import game.
That
for
was
us
another
too.
Import game. And then this week, I think we've got finally Do Re Mi Fantasy, the Mylon sequel.
Oh,
that's a good
game. Because that was quite
a
while ago,
game.
Wasn't it, for America?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it's like 6 months ago
over
here.
So we're finally catching up on that, and I think that pretty much wraps it up. For the next batch of import games. So I guess in a couple more months, maybe we can hope for Rondo that time.
Yeah, really. It's going to be about that time. I'm glad you guys can check out Do Re Mi, because that's a good game.
Yeah.
If you like Super Mario World, you'll like Do Re Mi.
And any import games on my radar, because it won't be bordered and running 50 hertz and be rubbish. Just that really gets
there you go.
So, there are upsides to things never having come out in Europe before.
Yes.
They never had a chance to screw them up. Okay, well, we need to get into listener mail, and Greg's going to start us off.
Yep, this one is from Anders, and he writes, suppose you were forced to look over a list of main Nintendo franchises and pick one to immediately retire. Apparently they're sort of like replicants in Blade Runner. Based on how you view their potential for fresh gameplay ideas, which franchise would you give the axe to? Or, if you want to flip the question over, which franchise would you select as the sole survivor of a Nintendo vault cleaning? Basically, I'd like to know what you guys think are the big end franchises with the most and the least future potential.
Well,
floor's open.
Yeah.
As far as the least potential, the one that I might get rid of, I might go with Kirby.
Oh.
Because I don't think there's been a good Kirby game in a long time, other than the one for DS,
which is not really a Kirby game.
So that one would be spared. You slap a different character on it.
That's not the franchise's fault. That's because people who have been in control of it are morons.
Well, you can say that with anything you want to.
I think Kirby has pretty much done everything it can do in terms of the core gameplay of flying around and sucking up enemies and getting their powers. You can always add more and more and more and more new powers, but unless you're going to commit the level design to make those powers useful and interesting and something that you care about, and you don't just like pass one up and get the next one willy-nilly, which you do in most Kirby games, then it doesn't really matter what new powers you add.
Yeah.
So I think, especially with Sakurai gone from HAL and Nintendo now, I think that when there's probably not... I'll be surprised if they ever make a new Kirby game that's really good. I really will.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been at least since Kirby 64, since they made one that was really good. I mean, Capcom made a good one for GBA, but it was really pretty derivative of the other ones, and that was Capcom anyway. I just don't think there's that much left to do with it.
I guess I'll go. Or Greg, do you want to go?
No, James, go ahead, please.
All right, I would say that if I had to give one the axe, although they might have already done it themselves, it would be Wave Race. Because, to be honest, those Nintendo-executed sports games, they just never felt quite right to me. I'm not sure what about.
I guess I would kind of like to see a Wave Race with really good motion controls. I mean, you know, in terms of the future potential.
I would kill off 1080 before Wave Race.
Well, I'm kind of
because the last 1080 was pretty shitty.
And the last Wave Race was just a remake of the N64 Wave Race.
Yeah, it was very similar. The track themes were practically identical. And
it's
things,
true,
but,
yeah. They need to
but
do
I would say there was a considerable increase in the sort of sense the speed, which made a big difference. Wave Race was nice and everything, but sometimes on the N64, it didn't really feel that much like a racing game because the sensation of speed was so muted by just it was so complicated for it to run with the water physics and everything. Blue Storm
still has the best water effects I've ever seen in any video game,
really.
Including brand new stuff.
It's really,
I mean,
really
it's
well
astonishing.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the physics were tightened up further. Although it was very admirable for the Nintendo 64. But yeah, the physics were tightened up, and then it was just, it felt faster, it felt more like racing to me on GameCube. It was just more of a sensation of speed. So it was pretty iterative, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, obviously being a launch game, it kind of constrained it and stuff. So that's why it'd be nice to see something more like a real sequel, good motion controls, just as good a physics, if not slightly better. You know, I mean, it's not an enormous well of potential, but it's something.
But if I had to pick a franchise that's actually active, and I'm going to get hate for this one, Star Fox.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
The thing about Star Fox is that there is clearly big potential there.
But I'm not convinced they can do anything with it. The series has gone more from, you know, being focused on the action shooting, which we've already established I like in a game, to being something for furries to get.
Well, it depends what you mean.
But
I mean, you want to terminate the path.
Gone the way of
on.
Sonic a
yeah,
little bit.
Yeah, and that's troubling because going the way of Sonic means going the way of pure garbage.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, yeah, you're talking.
I mean,
talking
if it's
it.
Going to get as bad as Sonic has, then yeah, I would prefer they kill it off now and not make any more. But Star Fox, in terms of potential, it has a ton.
It's got
they just have really dropped
and
the ball
fair,
in the past
Command,
10,
Command
12 years.
Command was a relative step in the right direction. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
but it didn't deliver on the franchise's potential.
Well, it didn't. But it was a good game.
It's a good
and
game.
It was not about that
furries,
like, totally peripheral. So, well, it did have a certain amount of that stuff in it.
But I mean, it feels like, especially in the case of adventure, it was all about creating characters to build their furry fan base. I don't know.
John, you
don't
haven't
know.
Said
it's,
much
it's,
here.
It's tough.
Do you
I
have
mean,
an idea?
It's tough for me to say.
John, don't betray. You're there. This is you with Nintendo with the hood up, and you're just like, execute order 66. He's going to kill them all in one
shot. I don't
know,
shot. Man. It's...
You don't even like Galaxy. Come on, admit it. Wipe them out. All of them.
I don't know, man.
He killed the younglings.
I don't know, man. It's tough for me to say like which ones should get the axe, but there are several franchises that I think Nintendo should just completely reboot because they're just rehash after rehash after rehash. And the first one that comes to mind is Zelda. Zelda to me, they're consistently good, but it's pretty much the same thing every time now. It's like I feel like I can play those games with my eyes closed. And even now with, you know, on the Wii, you know, the last one, I'm waiting for a Wii version, the next one in the franchise, hopefully to take advantage of the Wii to actually use it to the full extent.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, because the thing about Twilight Princess is, you know, it's very much appealing to what they thought people wanted, and I'm sure a lot of people did want, which was very much, you know, something like Ocarina of Time that was just more fully realised, you know, with better graphics and you know, things like that, and that's what they delivered. And I think you've delivered on that very, very well. So now it falls to them to say, well, they've done that. You know, they didn't really quite do that with Wind Waker because it was a little different in a few ways, you know, and people, not everyone warmed up to that, although a lot of people did. And then they did do that with Twilight Princess, so you can't tap that well again. They've got to do something different, and I'm confident they will.
And I think they did, though. I mean, go look at Phantom Hourglass. They did something really fucking
on the
different
DS,
there.
Yeah.
They didn't, though. But there was a lot of ways in which it wasn't that different. It was
but
kind of streamlined
in
some ways.
I think we can construe their comments regarding Twilight Princess before it got moved to the Wii, saying it's going to be the last game like Ocarina of Time. And
Okay, well, I'm going to say, John, good pick. We've had this conversation like three times before, listeners, if you want to know more about what we think of Zelda being rebooted, go listen to the old episodes.
Nice.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't have anything else to add to it because we've talked about it so many times. Yeah. But I want to say, in Zelda's defense, it's not nearly as rehashed as Pokemon, which is that I would gladly kill off. Profit be damned. Pokemon, seriously, the one on DS, and I played it a lot, it's still addictive, it's the same fucking game I played on Game Boy back in 1988.
And you know what's stunning about that?
They haven't done anything to it.
He had a time
machine. They changed the names. What? Oh, 1998. Did I say 88?
It feels like a game made in 1988.
Nice. In 88, I was in first grade.
Johnny got it with his long.
Carl wasn't even born yet. But, no, you weren't. No, you weren't. You were not in college in 88.
Well, let me say one thing about the Pokemon franchise, though. I would say the most evolutionary game in the series. Can you guess which one it is? No, I mean in the mainline series.
Gold and silver? Cause it had
gold and silver.
Female, male and female and stuff? I don't know.
It had male and female, it had days of the week, it had time, it had all kinds of crazy... And I think it even regressed from that.
I think those were pretty paltry improvements. But because you still did the same shit. You still went the same towns, they changed the names, you have different characters giving you the same speeches that they did in the first game. You have this Professor Oak is now Professor Elm, but he still does the same fucking thing. He wants you to do the same shit. It's just rehashed to all hell, and I don't care how many clocks you add or how many, you know, now the Pokemon can lay eggs and they turn into babies and they're more Pokemon. It's the same shit. And you go through the same towns, you go fight the Elite Eight at the end, and then you go to the special island. It's
You go to the special island, but you also unlock the entire world from the first game, which I thought was kind of cool.
Did they rehash the first game, they literally put the first game in the second game.
But there is a difference here between what they've been doing and the potential, isn't it? You know, because there probably is a potential to make something quite different, but
they just haven't felt the need to. I think they could start with
just revamping the combat engine. Honestly, I think
they definitely need to do that.
To real time with the combat engine, something that tried to more accurately map what the series as a franchise does in its, you know, its media element versus its game element. Something where there is strategy to the battles because you are trying to counter moves and things and crazy crap shit like that. They could make a more, you know, compelling combat in the game. And since that really is the crux of the game, it could make the rest of the game be more, you know, doable.
Hey, this was our first letter. We should probably move on to the next.
We should pay some lip service at least to which one of the kids we'd keep. Which of our favorites would
F-Zero.
We keep over everyone
F-Zero
else?
F-Zero for sure.
F-Zero? Really? For me, it would be Metroid, because I think there's so much you can do with that they haven't done. And it's the other than Zelda, it's the only one of Nintendo's franchises that really has kind of a universe yeah. built around it. And implied in that means there's so much territory that they will never explore that they could.
See, I would say that Zelda.
And for me, that's the one that that has the most. But
Zelda's kind of coherent universe is shattered, though. I mean, I think there's at least four timelines in Zelda.
Yeah.
So I mean, and
I'm not talking about continuity. I'm talking about. I'm talking about the things that you could do with that world. I don't care about story continuity and stuff like that. People take that way too seriously. Yeah, neither does Nintendo.
It's really tough, really tough decision, this one. I mean, really,
Greg's
two,
like, I hate all of them, so it's hard
two,
for me to decide.
Yeah, that's getting me confused with John again. The most one, I guess, probably Mario, a real push. Just because those games are so wonderful. And there's still more. In terms of potential, there's more potential to do stuff like New Super Mario Brothers. You know, like more side-scrolling yeah. and more ones like Galaxy. I think Zelda's been done more thoroughly. Although there's still so much. I mean, like I said, it's choosing between your children here for me.
Yeah.
But I'd probably go Mario.
Yeah, and when you play some Zelda-style games on other systems, it makes you realize just how much could be done
absolutely.
With Zelda. That's
yeah, and
not
hopefully
being
that's
done.
Where they're going now. You know that they really will finally yeah. shift away.
I just want them to go really, really crazy on it, and you know they could go really crazy with Metroid 2. They went a little bit crazy with mm-hmm. with Corruption, you know they could do a lot more. Anyway, we really need to move on to the next question.
My answer to that second part of the question, and this is going to make me sound okay. really, really just confused.
It can't be Ace Combat. It's not a Nintendo.
No. If they could only keep one, my answer would be Star Fox, even though that's the one I thought they should get rid of. Because... No, wait, hold on. Let me explain.
Then they could fix it.
I feel...
Because I got the whole
close.
Company working
I feel
on
like
one
if...
fucking franchise.
Exactly! If they actually took effort on their Star Fox games as opposed to co-opting them out, they could make a game that delivers on its promise. But as it stands, it's like a tier... I would say it's between a tier 2 and tier 3 franchise, so they really don't care.
Well, James, I mean, they could make Star Fox with platforming elements, and also you could have a bow and arrow in it. I mean, it would combine everything
fuck
into
yeah,
one game.
Dude.
I think they did that in Star Fox
well,
Adventures.
Well, they could make a Star Fox game.
Into a bowl in Star Fox
they could make a Star Fox game where you move around on a board, and then you roll, like, these space dice to move around, and at the end, Andross wants to steal, I don't know, power gems from you. I don't know.
Nice. Yeah, well, James, you definitely need to check out Panzer Dragoon Order.
Yeah, I know. It's just
that's all
it's
I'm
just
gonna
getting
say.
A hold of a copy of it.
Yep. Okay, so, John, right, please
one,
read
one
the next
thing,
question.
One other thing I
would
add
to move
that
on.
Is I would kill off any Mario sports
oh,
franchise
God.
Aside from Mario Golf. Okay, moving on.
John's like, Mario table tennis?
Gone. Okay, the next one is, JP writes, in RFN episode 111, you guys spent some time talking about the shortcomings of the Wii Shop channel and the storage situation. While I certainly agree that a storage solution is necessary and that the shop channel takes too long to download things, I don't think the reason writing and reading VC and WiiWare games to and from the SD card is low-quality SD hardware. Loading MP3s in Excitruck, stages in Brawl, and applications in the Homebrew channel is quite a bit quicker. I think the reason that moving the games takes longer is that the extra encryption that has to be applied or removed to games when moving them to and from the SD card causes them to be copied slower. Guys?
Yep, that's probably... I think that sounds like a very astute observation.
At the very least, that is taking up some processor cycles. Because I mean, even the most simple encryption does mean that every bit of data was changed, and you have to transcribe it back using an algorithm and a key and the data. So there's two inputs and an algorithm of some complexity.
Well, I think it's hard to speculate on the speed of the hardware based on loading MP3s in Excitruck, for instance. But I don't have any experience with the Homebrew channel because my Wii isn't modded or anything like that. But it sounds like if they're basically using this Homebrew channel to boot Homebrew games off the SD card and it's fast, that's kind of proof that it can be done. Mm-hmm. So I guess it stands to reason that the encryption is probably a very significant factor in here. So, yeah, very,
I don't know.
Very interesting.
The thing is, you can't tell me that they couldn't do it better than they are. You know, I mean, their first crack at it is not going to be optimized.
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
I'm sure. I mean, probably.
Yeah. Oh,
they
yeah,
probably have
not.
A terrible encryption
routine. I think if we're trying to delve into the software optimization of Nintendo's firmware, we're kind of looking into a hell's mouth. So it's probably not something that we even if we were experts in the field would want to delve into, because it's Nintendo and Christ knows what they did.
Yeah. Okay, next letter.
So Eric writes, "Hey guys, your last few podcasts, you said that Samurai Showdown 2 is on the SNK Classics Collection. It's not. Neither is Art of Fighting 2 or Fatal Fury 2 or any of the D2 published games. The SNK Collection is $30 on Wii and $15 on PS2. The PS2 has Fatal Fury, also Fatal Fury, Art of Fighting, and World Heroes collections that I found for $10 at Best Buy. Samurai Showdown and King of Fighter collections are also coming to the Wii. Just trying to keep things straight. Later." Well, technically, I did say the Samurai Showdown collection. I didn't put them into the arcade classics.
I think he's referring to a few episodes even before that, when we were maybe discussing when it was supposed to come out, and then it didn't, and we got off on that.
The fact
tangent,
of the matter
so.
Remains: there are collections with these games on them, and they're the better versions of the games.
I'm trying to imagine who would purchase a World Heroes collection, because World Heroes is sort of like a parody of Street Fighter.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like I understand maybe wanting to buy one if you're really into fighting games or something, but like, why the hell would you want a disc full of World Heroes?
Dude, you just got your Christmas gift.
Oh, please no. I've already got the first one on Virtual Console because I had to write a recommendation. Totally not worth $9. Absolutely not. So
recommended for everyone.
Okay. Good. I like this. People are writing in with like actual information to correct us. It's good. Keep it up. Okay, the next letter is from Sophia, and she writes, "During your life as gamers, what would you say were the most thrilling moments? I know mine would either be the first time I got to play Super Mario Bros. 3 or playing the demo of Super Mario 64. What do you guys think? Magical moments.
Super Mario 64 is a big one. I mean, I imported that in August of 96, so the anticipation was just crazy. I was absolutely, you know, the hype had just built to a point in my mind that was quite ridiculous. But even so, when I finally got my hands on it, it was fully delivered. I mean, it's such an incredible, you know, I'd played a little PlayStation, not PlayStation, actually Saturn, but still the full 3D nature of it, and getting your hand on the analog stick and everything, it was all something that I'd built up to in my mind, and getting hands on with it was pretty amazing experience for me.
See, it's hard for me because I missed the start of the N64 generation, so I sort of like I came into 3D with an already understanding of what it entailed, so I didn't get that awe-inspiring moment. So the move to
well, James, do you have anything going farther back than
I would say it might actually be when I first got a video game system and I first actually played, you know, a game outside of an arcade, where, you know, seeing it hooked up to a TV in my hands and controlling what's on it, because I was like 3 or 4 at the time, it was pretty, you know, huge moment for me. I think it was actually like my parents' olden television they bought before I was born. And I think the first game I played was B-17 Bomber with the voice box. And having the game try to talk to me, I think probably blew my mind. even though it's like flop or other such really awful, almost duck sounding attempts at voices, but I don't know, something about it was really surreal.
Yeah. I think I would have to go all the way back to the first game I ever beat. And the moment of when I beat the game and started freaking out, because I was so proud of myself, because up to that point, I'd played games at my friends' houses, I'd had an NES for probably a year, and I loved playing the games, I, you know, totally obsessed over Nintendo Power and stuff, but I never felt like I was good at games. I never felt like I would get to the end of a game. And it was DuckTales for NES. It was like a Saturday afternoon, I had a couple friends over, we're all playing it. I still to this day love that game and think it's amazing. But I was just like uncommonly good at this, or I kind of figured out the rhythm of it and practiced it, played it enough times that I got to the end and I actually beat the game. And it was the first game in my life that I'd beaten, and it has kind of an ending. It shows like a newspaper with Scrooge, his picture on there saying, you know, he found a lost treasure or something. I don't know. But I was like taking pictures of it with my parents' camera, you know, and like getting, Mom, come here, look at this. I beat this game. I was so proud of it. So that's probably the one that sticks out the most for me.
I go back so far. It's probably, for me, it would be stuff like, Johnny, you were just talking about, like, you know, the first game you beat on the NES. I go back to like Atari 2600, like playing. I remember when I beat Pitfall, was huge because I remember I actually took a picture of it and I think I sent that in to like, I beat Pitfall.
You beat Pitfall?
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Dude,
actually, I beat
props.
Pitfall.
Respect.
Yeah, I beat Pitfall.
That game
and
is brutal.
The game has an ending.
Yeah, but it's so cheap though. I mean, all it is there's like you basically play and play and play and play, and then you get to one screen and there's like a bar of gold on the right hand side, and you basically swing across. You touch the bar of gold, and the game just stops. And then, and that's it. There's nothing. It's just, the game just stops, and then you have to reset it.
Awesome.
Go right back to the start. That's the end of it. I remember I beat that.
That's
I beat
brilliant.
Pitfall 2 Lost Caverns as well. Also, on the Atari 800, two of my favorite games were Castle Wolfenstein and Beyond Castle Wolfenstein. And so I beat both of those. Love those. And then, you know, going on into the NES years kind of thing, like, you know, playing, you know, Super Mario Brothers, you know, all of those games. I mean, there's really too many. And then, you know, Super NES, beating stuff like Super Mario RPG, beating Super Metroid. Those were the huge, huge, like, really, you know, times that I was just kind of like, wow, this is amazing sort of thing. So.
All right. Well, next question,
all right.
Please.
Let's see here. Do you have me twice there, Johnny? Yeah.
Yeah, the order got all screwed up.
Yeah, your question would be the one right after.
Yeah, we got all screwed up.
The
though,
one
so
that
yes,
I just
done.
Did.
It's your turn.
Okay, Tom from Canberra, Australia, writes a question to Greg. Being the only monotheistic console worshipper on the podcast, how has Greg handled the El Nintendo El Nino cycle of game droughts? And has Nintendo's pollution abatement measure worked?
is that that his way of their apology for E3?
I guess so.
I think we can all answer this because I would imagine that at one point we've all suffered mm-hmm. through a Nintendo console drought.
Yep.
Or system drought.
Well, I mean, yeah, I suppose.
I suffered through the.
It's been a few years for me since I only had a Nintendo
system. I suffered
system,
through the
yeah.
N64 drought and the GameCube droughts. So I mean. I'm pretty well versed in this too. I think we all know what it feels
like.
Well,
I mean, for me, I'm uniquely conditioned to survive.
Are you?
Because I'm an import.
He's in
gamer.
Europe. Yeah.
Import gamers. You know, everything's so expensive and stuff. You're not going to buy that many games. And obviously, with the N64, it's a double whammy.
Yeah, because they're already
there
too
weren't that many.
Expensive.
So they were really N64 games are very very expensive. Super Famicom games are very very expensive. So I was just pretty well conditioned to that. So I mean, it doesn't really strike me necessarily these days, or even during the GameCube era, that it's that bad, relatively speaking. Because just context-wise, I don't really have a context for a time in my life where I was just buying loads of games, you know, every other week or whatever. It's just never happened. And then on the other side, though, I guess with the one thing is just the DS has certainly helped me weather a lot of stores, because I've been playing a lot more of the DS over its life than I did GBA, for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is
me too.
The different kinds of games and things. So that's I mean, with DS and you know, with the Wii lineup hasn't been that brutal, at least as far as I'm concerned. I haven't felt particularly, you know, I haven't felt that there's a dearth of games for me personally.
Yeah, I think probably the worst drought in Nintendo history was probably the N64. That drought was so epic. It was just unbelievable. I mean, how many N64 games really came out? I think it was like 99 total.
Yeah, it's around 100.
Yeah, which is insane.
Wow. That's
yeah, over the course of 5 years,
that's unbelievable.
That's
ludicrous. I had no idea it was that for you.
Yeah, it's a ridiculously small number. When you put it into perspective, the PlayStation had something like 1,000 games.
I think we had 100 games within 3 months coming out.
100,
maybe 6 months, maybe 6 months.
A lot of consoles recently have hit their 100 games within a year. So for the N64 to have had 100 games lifetime is just unbelievable.
Thanks, Nintendo.
A lot of
thanks
them,
for going to cartridges,
a
guys.
A lot of them...
Fuckers.
A lot of them were utter shit. There was a huge amount
Dude,
of shit
Quest
on
the 64? N64. That game was amazing.
Shut up, John.
You know, Quest 64 is actually fun. It's not a good RPG,
not.
But it's not a terrible game. It's really not.
It's not. It certainly is not an awful game.
It's really not a terrible game. People make fun of it because it's like the only RPG on N64 other than Paper Mario and Aiden Chronicles, which is pretty bad. But Quest 64. Seriously, lay off. It's not a bad game. It's not great, but it's not terrible.
Have I ever discussed Aiden Chronicles?
Yes, you have.
Yes, yes.
No, have you? Oh, you played it?
I own it.
He's talked
what?
About this. Before.
I don't remember
he's
hearing
talked
this.
About this before. Trust
oh man.
Me.
Yeah, I actually
okay.
still have
I'll
it
have to
and
go
the
back
box
and listen
and the instruction manual. Because
I'll all... have to go listen because
yeah,
I don't remember
it's
that.
It's a ways it back is, now. I think it's probably like
it's,
in the 80s.
It is like playing a game. Aiden Chronicles because the graphics is like playing a decent game with graphics through a bottle of olive oil.
Somewhere underneath all that olive oil is a good game.
Okay.
No, it's still an awful
it's
game.
It's part of the game itself.
So I'm not really sure that we answered Tom's question, but
what was his question?
it was a nice nostalgia so, moment yeah. at least. Thinking
I would
about
say
all
going
the droughts.
Through a drought on a console, a Nintendo console, is the most. It's not bad when, you know, releases are kind of low for other systems, but when you're hearing, you know, the System A got a fantastic game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes it harder.
You're like...
Well, I think Greg hit it right in the geez. Head. I mean, the DS, definitely. I mean, there's pretty... I mean, I hear about, you know, cool games coming out on the DS all the time, and I'm like, wow, I can't wait to get that. Like, you know, all kinds of stuff, like the Korg DS10 or whatever, stuff like that, where, you know, that stuff keeps my interest up, even though, I mean, as I've advertised, I'm going to boycott the Wii until next year. So, until probably the Conduit comes
really?
Out, I'm boycotting the Wii. I'm not buying any more Wii games. Because...
So you're not actually going to buy the Wario game?
No, probably not. Nope.
Wow.
For me, it depends on the price. I'm very interested in the Wario game, but they still...
I saw, it looks like it's $50. I saw the
we're only just under 4 weeks away from it coming out. So
there's
promotional
material. But I have not seen any official word
well,
on
I've
the
seen
price
a lot
of
promotional
it yet.
Material up today, actually.
I would pay $40 for it, maybe, but $50.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's something I've heard that it's actually pretty long and has a lot of replay, so maybe that's not so bad. But
I mean, I'll wait for the reviews.
Anyway, that's off topic. So, yeah, portables are a good strategy to help you through a drought. And I would also say there's a lot to be said for going back and playing your old games, especially ones that you didn't finish for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Even just games like, for me, like something like Eternal Darkness is a game that I beat 3 times when it first came out. And lately, I really would like to go back to it. I just don't have time. I'm playing too many other games.
That's something
You know, if I was in a drought, that's something
that's
I would
something
do.
That as an import gamer, you get very... accustomed to over the years.
Yeah.
Idea. And I still do now. Very many new games I'm quite happy to play. I mean, I've played through pretty much every Metroid game ever that I've ever owned, rather, because I haven't owned all of them multiple times, for instance.
See, I would say that even in the case of the N64, even replaying your old games sort of ran out of steam. Because I think, honestly, I played some of my favorite N64 games 10, 11 times, simply because there was nothing else out there.
Oh, yeah. Sin and Punishment got really heavily worked over, because towards the end of the N64's life, there wasn't a great deal.
Yeah, I remember the gap between, I think it was Perfect Dark and Majora's Mask being just painfully long.
Yeah, it was like 6 months, wasn't it, virtually?
And it was just like, oh, my God. And it would have been even longer if Perfect Dark hadn't been delayed. Think about how much longer it would have been. It might have been a full year.
You know, that summer, let's see, Paper Mario came out before Perfect Dark.
Yeah.
But that summer, I think, is when Conker came out. So I was playing Conker that summer in between those two.
Conker wasn't, you know, an especially lengthy game. I think I beat it.
No, it's not super long, but it's, yeah, good.
It's good.
I still defend Conquer.
Yeah, I think
I
beat it in a couple of days and still felt kind of unfulfilled.
The last N64 game I bought during its era, and that was the only N64 game I owned between Majora's Mask, the Christmas before, and then the Christmas afterwards, which was the GameCube launch. That was the only game I bought in that time. That's a drought.
Yeah, and that was yeah, that is epic drought. I think I might have actually spent $0 on games between buying Majora's Mask and GameCube's release.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, that
it was pretty bad.
That's unbelievable.
All right. Well, I was going to say something else, but I think I'll skip it so we can move on. So James has the last question.
Adolf from Denton, Texas writes, do you guys think the Wii Motion Plus will actually make billiards pool games for Wii worthwhile? I heard that all the billiards games on the Wii suck because ZX's gesture movement is not recognized well by the current Wii tech, and the traditional controls for the sport are just boring for this type of game. Currently, the Wii is decent with Z-axis movement, with Metroid Prime 3 being the only example that actually does it well. But it's not perfect, and the vast majority of games still fail when using Z-axis motion gestures for the Wii. Well, to my knowledge, the Z-action Metroid Prime is actually done through triangulation, where it realizes it's closer to the Wii sensor bar than it was.
That's pretty much the only way you can do it, other than a simple like thrusting motion, which you see in some games, and that doesn't work simply because it doesn't feel natural.
Right, and,
but in terms of how the Wii Remote recognizes it, it recognizes Z-axis like acceleration the same way it does any other direction.
Right.
But as far as like actually like being able to sense the depth of where it is, like it does in Metroid Prime, it's using triangulation with the two infrared lights on the sensor bar.
And
it's very tricky. It's hard to do.
I think a good
The problem is Wii Motion Plus isn't going to help that because they're gyroscopes and they don't help. They don't have anything to do with the system being able to recognize where the remote is in terms of distance from the screen. It's not going to get any better with that.
Well, I don't know. It might do better in terms of detecting some elements of the movement, but I don't think it's going to do that much better. And I think one good example...
As far as depth from the screen, Wii Motion Plus is not going to help
but I
can in
think
any
there's
way.
One...
It's just not what the technology
does.
Yeah,
I think there's one good way of showing you the limitations of triangulation. It's point your Wii Remote at the screen in the home menu, and then turn it upside down, and watch as the finger stutters as it tries to figure out how you're holding the remote until it settles on pointed down.
Right.
And that's it trying to triangulate based on the two different LED signals it's getting, and it being confused by the sudden shift. And it does take a little while to adjust. And if you tried to do that in Red Steel with the whole tilting sideways thing, your arm looked like you were having a seizure.
But this is why, with Wii Play Pool or whatever, how the efficacy of it is strongly related to your position relative to the sensor bar, and if you've calibrated it, or you know, if you're trying, because I remember I played Wii Play around a friend's house who had a Wii like at launch day or whatever, and we were sort of his TV was wall mounted, so we were a bit too close to it. And sort of a down underneath it, and it was hopeless. And then afterwards, we tried
that
it.
That would be impossible.
You know, that was just because of some constraints in his room at the time. With subsequent occasions, it worked relatively well. I mean, certainly not that well, but you could tell that is the key element in it, is the triangulation with the sensor bar and motion plus.
I think if you could do a proper triangulation as a starting point, an origin, you could, in theory, do a relatively decent Z-action motion using a force distance algorithm, but that would be really complex and kind of unnecessary, and what's the point? I think it's...
I think you're going to have to... For this technology to improve, you're going to have to wait for Wii 2 or whatever
if,
the next
if they
system
had
is,
put
because...
a second... I know there is actually another... LED sensor on the Wii Motion Plus, but it's on the bottom, isn't it? So you could have.
Talking shit.
I thought they said originally
that
you would actually be able to detect it if it was tilted up better.
Yes, Wii Motion Plus detects.
I thought they said
the
it would detect
the
controller.
No,
the
I
tilt.
Don't know that. It's just purely, but.
No. Oh, okay.
It had the Wii Motion Plus
it's
has
just,
nothing
just
to do
about
with
the gyroscopic motion sensing, rather than just the acceleration.
Oh, okay. Well, then they could actually make this a lot easier if they had put another sensor on it, so it could double triangulate. But that's not going to happen. And that's the only.
I think what it probably needs is a higher quality image scanner in the remote.
Yeah.
You know, the part at the front
with
the kind of the dark.
Yeah.
Covering. It needs a higher quality, more accurate version of that, and you might want to use more than two signals coming from the
right,
sensor
because
bar.
Then you could do
so you might want to have two sensor bars, maybe one on top of the TV and one below it, and then it has more data to do that triangulation.
Or even if
that's not going to happen until
the next
console.
They wouldn't even have to be on, you know, on top and bottom. Anything, as long as they're not collinear, would give it two extra triangulations with just one point.
Exactly. That's the problem. The sensor bar, they're collinear.
You have, what, eight other triangulation options? And you know, anything you could
do.
Yeah,
then you have a lot. Then it's an optimization problem,
right.
And you're going to find something that's good, basically.
But, you know,
so
it's
a lot of processing power to do that kind of stuff. That's one reason that most developers don't bother, because it's difficult to calculate the depth of the like the way Metroid Prime 3 does it, that is really difficult to program. And even then, as Adolf notes, it doesn't work perfectly. It's kind of glitchy and annoying. I mean, and what it's doing is not only the depth, but also the twist. And the twisting, I think, is not so much based on the acceleration, but the actual twist, because what it's looking at, like, okay, now the sensor bar is like 90 degrees turned from where the remote is expecting it, so it kind of computes the angle from that. That part will be improved with Wii Motion Plus, because then you can just do it with the gyroscopes and not have to use the infrared for it, because it's obviously not very good for that. But as far as the depth, that's not going to improve.
Yeah, I think that was probably just, you know, something they didn't really intend people to do a lot of when they designed.
Well, it was a big selling point of the in 3D space when the Wii Remote was first announced.
Yeah, but I think if they had really,
which
I
that's
know
a,
it
that's
is,
a pretty
but,
dubious
I mean, that,
claim.
That is
the
only
space.
Sense in which it doesn't.
I would say it technically tracks it in 3D space.
Yeah,
you know, if you call that.
Technically,
oh,
yes.
In terms
practically,
of their
no. I mean, what the sensor bar works great in a 2D sense. In terms of, like, where am I pointing at right now? But in terms of where is the remote in the room, although it kind of can do that, not very well, not very accurately, and you have a lot of problems when you have multiple people playing the game and they're not
exactly
optimally
not.
Positioned
right.
in front of the TV.
And the game can determine.
So that is a generation away.
If you had
away,
four
I
remotes
think.
Next to each other, the game, well, the system could determine where they are relative to each other. It could say, this one is on the extreme right, this one's on the middle right, this one's middle left, this one's extreme left.
That would be really cool. Because, see, the way it's done now, the controllers are determining where they are. The system doesn't know.
Right.
Because it's as far as the system's concerned, it's a passive level. The sensor bar is just beaming out
right.
So the remotes are determining what's going on, and then they beam that information back to the system.
Right, and for them to be able to do that, it would have to go and then on the system and recalculate based on what the controllers told them.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of really interesting ways they could improve on the Wii Motion technology in the next generation, but Motion Plus is not going to be the cure-all for those problems, unfortunately. But it is a nice step in the right direction. All right, well, we're going to end the show on a nice technical conversation there. So I want to thank James, John, and Greg for sitting in with us again, of course, every week.
Yep.
And want to thank our wonderful listeners for all their great emails, especially like the last two where they gave us their locations. It's pretty cool to know that we have listeners in Australia and places like that. So I would love if people would include their locations, but it's not a requirement, of course. And if you want to have your letter, comment, question, whatever, read on the air, send it to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And we promise we read every single letter. We can't always put every single one on the air, and sometimes we have to truncate them a little bit for time considerations, ironically. But we do definitely read everyone. We consider every single letter to be on the show. So please keep those coming. We had some great ones this week, and look forward to doing another segment like this soon. All right, that's all for this show. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, John, whatever you just said, I agree with.
Oh, really? Maybe I should go grab my vodka.